My name is Tracy Morgan. And I feel great. I feel great to be here with Conan.
Oh, that's so nice. You're supposed to say you feel, you know, great to be my friend, but you skipped over that.
Well, I feel bloated, really.
I was going to say.
I feel bloated.
Is it gas? Do you have a gas issue?
I think it's gas.
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Ring the bell. Brand new shoes. Walking blues. Climb the fence. Books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, the podcast that aims to please. I'm just trying out various slogans. That one that came into my head, that's no good. We don't really aim to please. Sorry about that.
No.
Water resistant.
No.
And safe around children.
No.
No?
What the podcast is?
I don't know. Let me try again.
Yeah.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a...
I liked that. I'm so sorry. I thought you were doing more slogans.
Oh no, I was really going to start again. I thought you guys wanted me to.
No, we were just playing.
No,
along.
I liked what you were doing.
Let me
doing.
Try again. All right. Well, all right. Well, shut up. Let's go. All right. All right. Don't tell a woman to shut up, Gorley. Here we go.
Sorry.
And stop doing a Conan impression. Whew. Right. Here we go. Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, the podcast that gets it right every time.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Bold statement.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry, but I do sometimes think we need a slogan or something. And, you know, the New York Times has all the news that's fit to print. And I think we need something like that, because I think a recent study shows that most Americans turned to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend for their news.
No.
I think, yeah.
No.
I didn't even know the New York Times had a slogan.
When was the last time you saw a newspaper? Your generation doesn't see newspapers, right?
Well, no, they...
It says all the news that's fit
what do you
to print.
See? Yeah, they, okay.
Most things used to have a slogan, you know,
okay.
Like the Titanic, you can't sink me. the Hindenburg, I'll never blow up. things had slogans. And I just thought, hey, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. This, you know, the podcast that aims to please. And your aim will help.
You know, you've actually used that slogan before, because we did a segment where you talked about how it aims to please and pleases to aim.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
You really want to please. But yeah. I don't think it's working. Come for Matt and Sona, stay for Conan.
Or come for Conan, stay for Matt and Sona.
Hey.
How about Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend? We're the show. We got the goods.
Oh, boy. This has to potentially fit on a mug.
Hold on. Wow, that was terrible.
That did not sound good. You had time, too. You had some time.
You know what I love to do is promise something big. My favorite thing to do when I was on a basketball court as a kid was to say, check this out, and take a crazy shot and miss completely. I thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Promise something with great confidence. Remember, I used to do that all the time in the office, all the years we were making late night TV. If anybody had a football, I'd call for it in like what I thought was a really cool, confident way.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you know, go long down here. I'm open. And then they would throw it to me and I would completely flail my arms and miss it as badly as I could and act like, how did you, God damn it, watch it. And that just always made me laugh. No one else probably but me. But I like coming in with a lot of confidence. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. The podcast where you cast the pod. We pod the...
Okay, let's try this again. I'm going to count to three, and I want you to come in with so much gusto, and then don't think of a slogan. Whatever comes out, comes out. One, two, three, go.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. If you've got corn, we've got cheese, and it's cheddar all the way.
That's it. Put it on the mugs. You've got corn, we've got cheese, and it's cheddar all the way. That's brilliant because it tells you about the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's pithy and brief.
And it's the way kids talk today.
That's right.
I swear to God, one of the things that I think has made me such a successful recording artist is that I listen. When I go places, I listen to what's happening around me and just absorb it. Even at my advanced age. And I'm constantly hearing kids say like, hey, you've got the corn, we've got the cheese, and it's cheddar all the way. That's something that's happening out there. Huh. And I'm just reflecting, like any great artist, I'm reflecting back what I'm hearing.
Where were you right. when you heard that?
At a Renaissance fair. And a man in the corner who was dressed as a knight had just had a very, he was having a stroke. He was fine. They got him some anticoagulants, but he just out of nowhere said, you know, we've got the call and it's Cheddar all the way. You know, he couldn't even say it right at that point, but he's fine now. I don't want to say he's better than fine. And he's now an Olympic athlete. So everything's fine.
Oh my God. What does it say that Matt was like, don't think, just say it. And you said just complete nonsense. Yeah. I mean, should we be concerned about...
Were you that man having the stroke in the suit of armor?
Yeah. You should be concerned about me the way they were concerned about Picasso.
Oh,
when
God.
He started his cubist movement.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Intro.
Yeah. Oh.
Who's on the show today?
Well, someone who probably wouldn't tolerate anything that I just said.
Yeah.
We have a terrific guest. My guest today is a hilarious actor and comedian and just a hilarious human being who was a cast member on Saturday Night Live and starred in the hit NBC series 30 Rock. Now you can see him in the TBS series The Last OG. I am thrilled to talk with him today. Tracy Morgan, welcome. I gotta say, there are very few people that make me as happy when I see them in person as you. You always delight me. You are so crazily funny, and it just comes off of you. It's like sunshine. It makes
Thank
me happy.
You
know,
you,
I don't know what that is. And I remember when COVID first broke out, and I started to have to do interviews on Zoom. And I remember thinking, this is going to be terrible. These interviews on Zoom are going to be terrible. And you were one of the first people to come on.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember this, but you were in front of a fish tank.
A shark tank.
A shark. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
I told you it's not a fish tank, man.
It's a shark tank.
Fish tanks is something you buy at Petco's.
Right.
That's a fish tank. A fish bowl is something you win at Coney Island.
Okay.
I got a shark tank.
Yes. You got a shark.
20,000 gallons.
It was a 20,000. You were, and was this in your house? Where is this?
House.
It's in your, you have a shark in your house.
In my back room, I turned my pool, my whole pool house into a shark tank, an aquarium.
Okay. So
and it's huge.
You did this interview in front of a shark tank and you were so funny and I was laughing so hard that I think I lost pieces of lung. Pieces of lung came out. And I thought, oh my God, Zoom interviews are going to be great. And then none of them were that funny again.
Are you serious? You
were the best one, yeah.
Did I set the bar?
You were the first and you were the best. And for the rest of COVID, I was yelling at guests over Zoom.
Are you serious?
You know Tracy Morgan. I just shout that at them. Hey, Meryl Streep, what's the matter? Can't you get it up to Tracy Morgan levels? She was very offended.
Hey, man, we was doing some great stuff that day on that show.
Yeah.
Me and you.
Yeah, but today we're going to take it even higher. First of all, I want to know, how are you doing? How are you mentally, physically?
Well, first I got hit by a truck. Yeah. Then I got hit by a pandemic. Then I got hit by a pandemic.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So if don't blame the truck.
So you're saying you were hit by the truck and that was your excuse for a while. And a legitimate excuse, you got hit by a truck. But then the pandemic came along.
Yeah, hit us too.
Yeah. And so what was worse, getting hit by the truck or hit by the pandemic?
I think the pandemic because toilet paper was out of the window.
Yeah. You could still, after you were hit by the truck, you could still get some toilet
paper. Like I told you, the pandemic never affected the ghetto.
Right. It didn't?
There was always toilet paper there. And if you didn't have toilet paper, you used a brown paper bag.
I didn't know that. That's the backup plan.
Hey, your butt got to get wiped, man. Your butt has to get wiped.
So you're saying during the height of the pandemic, when none of the rest of us could get toilet paper, you're saying—
Not in the ghetto.
The ghetto, they had no problem.
Yeah, newspaper. I'm a New Yorker. Okay? I'm a New Yorker.
Uh-huh.
Frank's, sauerkraut, onions, and we never eat sitting down. You never eat sitting down. You never judge a man by what he drinks, only how he holds it.
Okay. Oh, okay. This is good wisdom. This is beautiful.
Only how he holds it.
Okay.
You judge a man by how he holds the drink. If he holds his drink up here, he's brand new.
Right.
But if he got that drink right down there.
So down, we're on a podcast, trying to explain. Down by the hip.
Yeah.
Down by the hip means you're cool.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me, when I drink, I hold my drink with both hands, like little raccoon paws, and I put it up near my face. And I usually have a straw, a little
You're
straw.
Rookie.
I have a straw coming out of my beer sometimes.
You don't drink beer with a straw.
I know.
You never do that. See? You got to be on a corner strangling a court.
Uh-huh.
A quarter O English. That was my thing. O English 800.
Okay. This is a...
That's when I learned how to handle my liquor.
Old English.
You got to know how to handle your liquor.
Okay.
And then I got on Saturday Night Live in the O English.
Yeah.
Turned into champagne.
Oh.
That's when I became an alcoholic.
That's the cheer?
Saturday Night Live turned me into an alcoholic.
Is that true?
Yes.
Can
true.
I say that that's
because
the most...
the parties, you know, when you do live television, it's like getting shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like getting shot out of a cannon. And then there's a party.
Yeah.
And the parties were entirely too late.
Yeah.
And when you get to the party, because you was on the show, everybody you see me go, yo, you want me to buy you a drink? And I started drinking.
Yeah. So you went from Old English 800
to champagne.
To champagne. You never went back to Old English.
I quit. Never. Then I quit. I got two DUIs and I quit.
Good for you. Good for you.
I mean, when I got my DUIs, he said, walk the line. And I looked at the cop. I said, can I curse here?
Yeah.
I looked at the cop when I was walking the line. You remember, you know they make you take the line test.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
And I said, move your foot, motherfucker.
You said that to the cop?
Yeah.
While he's giving you a DUI test.
He told me, you going down, street punk.
Not a good move, I'm guessing.
Nah. And I got to the AA meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you guys are crazy. I had to get a drink. After the AA meeting,
I said,
you don't do that shit when you drink. When you drink, you just fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
That was crack that made you burn that fucking house down.
My guess is they probably escorted you out of AA. Is that right?
Kicked me out, yeah. They didn't escort me. They kicked me out.
They kicked you out. I tried to put a nice spin on it.
My name always coming up in everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Okay. My name is always coming. They stormed the Capitol. My name come up. Obama gets pregnant, my name comes up.
Now, hold on a second. A, I don't think your name came up.
My name is coming up. Two girls in a cup, my name comes
up. Okay,
okay. All I did was give them a piece of paper and said, call this number when you're done. I didn't make them girls put doodle on them.
Okay.
I did, Conan. I just gave them a little piece of paper with a number on it.
So you're responsible for the two girls in a cup.
They tested on missiles in North Korea, my name come up.
I don't
remind me to
remember.
Call Kim when I get out of here.
Okay, so you're saying that
I
you get
talk to Kim.
You get blamed for a lot of stuff.
Everything.
You get blamed.
You see how they stormed the Capitol?
Yeah.
You want to see 800,000 white people go crazy?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It was one black dude, and he wasn't even down with it. He just wanted to steal a TV. Your Palacio office.
So you were not there. You were not there at the storming of the Capitol. Do you promise that you were
my
not?
My name came up. My name come up in it.
Well.
I ain't tell them to storm that Capitol.
Were you hanging out with them beforehand? Were you hanging out with the people that stormed the Capitol before?
We was talking about it.
You were in that
we
group.
We had a little campfire and we talked about it. I didn't tell them to storm. I never said storm.
So you were camping with the guys that stormed the Capitol.
That's it.
And you guys were just shooting the shit.
You seen the guy with the paint on his face?
Yeah, yeah.
We were just talking about it.
You were just talking about it.
I never said storm anything.
Right. You maybe talked about maybe go over there.
We could storm the grocery store, the deli.
Yeah.
But I didn't say storm the Capitol.
Okay. Well, then we cleared up that one.
You know I'm going to be president one day, right?
You're going to be president?
You think? I could run.
You could run for president?
Run, Trey, run.
Is that what people tell you when you see them?
That's what a lot of people tell me.
Really? You think with your background, you could run for president?
You know how many presidents got a felony? I could still become president with that felony. Why not?
I think you could, actually.
A lot of presidents got misdemeanors and felonies.
They do? I didn't know
that. Obama sniffed cocaine in college.
No, I don't think he...
He did. He said he did it enthusiastically.
I thought he smoked pot.
Not like he didn't do it enthusiastically. It's not like he went to the party and saw some lines and said, oh, man, I got to sniff. And
yeah.
He did it enthusiastically.
Well, it's good to approach all recreational activities with enthusiasm.
Everybody got a life before they become who they become.
Exactly. Yeah. And you've had quite a life before you became Morgan. Yeah.
I did a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how many kids I got?
How many kids you got?
On the books or off?
Let's go
off the books. All of them.
About 33, 34.
You've got 34 kids.
Yeah, I'm a good daddy, man. I even come back and see them every couple of years.
Do you know all their names?
I break water.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about my women.
When you're, okay. And you break
water? Yeah, I break water. I cut umbilical cords. That's just what I do.
Okay.
For a living.
You get paid.
I break water and I cut umbilical cords.
You get paid to have
break
these.
Break water and cut umbilical cords. Even if the kid ain't mine, I'm there cutting.
Oh, even if the cut child is not yours.
That's what I do professionally.
So someone will be having a baby and suddenly Tracy Morgan comes sliding into the room.
And cut the umbilical cord.
Do you bring your own?
A lot of dads don't know how to do it. I know how to cut.
So you don't even wait to be asked. You just come on in.
I'm right there. I'm a professional umbilical cord cutter.
You're good at it.
Yes.
Do you bring your own scissors?
Yeah, they're golden.
You have golden scissors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Professional umbilical cord cutter and water breaker.
Okay.
That's the title of my whole job.
Okay.
Looking at me.
People are looking
She's looking at me.
You know, I got to say, Tracy, I've known you a long time. We've known each other a long time.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I know that you have patterned all of your comedy after me. You learned everything from me.
Absolutely.
Because everyone says, people look at me all the time and they go, Tracy Morgan's completely ripping you off with his style of comedy.
Don't listen to him.
Just let it go.
Listen, listen, listen. The student, the master, that's me and you. The master, the student. I'm like Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
You see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Dragon technique.
That was just you sort of making Crane versus monkey.
That's what I've learned from you, the crane.
So you feel like I'm your master that taught you this amazing martial arts.
Taught me a lot. The master taught the student. The crane technique of comedy. monkey technique of comedy.
You haven't said one reasonable thing since we started talking. You have not said one slightly reasonable thing. Everything he said.
That's not going to happen.
Has been total bullshit since
absolutely.
You are a professional umbilical cutter. Michelle Obama's pregnant.
But if you look
you
at
you stormed
it,
the Capitol.
Look at the stuff we've talked about.
Uh-huh.
Sitting right here. Our conversation jumped a million times.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to need a transcript later to find out what happened.
Absolutely. You always need that with me.
I think I first met you.
I miss you.
I know.
I've done a lot of late night in my life. I could honestly say doing it with you was the best.
Well, thank you.
I always look forward. I would ask my public, what am I going to do, Conan? You and Howard Stern, that's the two I love working with.
Well, that's really nice of
you
to say.
But with you was different. We get into a thing.
Yeah, we would always get into a thing. And one of the things I noticed about you that I loved is you would come out and you'd be outrageous and you wouldn't make eye contact with me. You know what? You were always, and I asked you once, hilarious. But every time you'd say something, you'd look off to the side and then you'd look off to the other side.
Because you loved it.
I loved it. And
I loved it when I left your world.
I know. And I would say to you afterwards, what are you doing? When we talk, you don't look at me. You look out at the crowd to the left, and then you look to the right, and you look to the left, and you're hilarious, but it's funny. It's completely unique to you, and you said, I'm checking them out. I'm checking in with my people, and I'm checking them out.
What I was doing was going back to the ghetto. In the ghetto, you can't trust nobody, and you got to keep your eyes open, and that's what I was doing. And it started on your show.
You would come on my show, and you would feel like I got to keep in.
Because I had to watch the band. I knew that dude. The guy playing the bass, I knew him.
Mike Merritt.
I knew
you
him.
Knew Mike
I knew
Merritt.
Mike was out on the streets. I knew Mike. I knew Mike when he was on the streets. I knew Mike when he was on the street.
Uh-huh.
So I had to keep an eye on him.
You had to keep an eye on him. But it was so funny because you have such a natural comedic rhythm. It's just you. You didn't learn it from anybody. I know
my dad.
Oh, you did?
I got all my sense of humor from my dad. My dad did stand-up, like I said, in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
He would do comedy. And to do stand-up, my dad had more talent in his pinky than I got my whole body. My father could do dialect, and he was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So to do stand-up comedy in that environment under those circumstances,
mm-hmm.
crazy funny, Richard Pryor funny. Mm-hmm. So I would be up under my dad. I wasn't learning nothing from my friends. You know just as much about anything as I do. But when I was under my dad, I was a roadie in his band at a young age. So I would watch him and the guys in the band talking, and I thought it was incredible. I didn't really know what they was talking about, but I just knew it was incredible. They start laughing, and I would just watch everybody. And I just got everything from my father.
That's amazing.
My mom's could sing, and she was funny, too.
Right.
My mom's was hilarious. My mom's, when we start jonesing on each other, all the kids, my mom's would jump in there.
Everyone asks me, and I tell them, and I don't care where you're from, what your background is, but you learn comedy when you're a kid. If you could be the one at the table that was getting everybody laughing the most.
If you aimed your sense of humor at an uncle, and you got him. Mm-hmm. Laughing is infectious. Everybody else starts to laugh.
Right.
And it's that, all of that leads to stand-up. Right. 5,000 people, 6,000
people. Well, to me, what I notice is that it doesn't really matter. Like, the feeling I got if I made 4,000 people at the Chicago Theater laugh versus the feeling I got if I made my family laugh at the table, it's kind of the same. It's the same feeling.
Michael Jackson was great, but he could perform in front of 1 million people in the audience. Mm-hmm. It was difficult for him to be one-on-one.
Right.
You've seen.
Right.
He started talking like this. But when he's on stage, he's a dynamo because that's his world.
Right.
And nobody could touch him in his world.
Right.
And it's the same for me and you.
Yeah.
When we in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people, nobody could touch us. We in a zone. We in a world. We in a world. And that's how I feel when I did your show.
I'm going to ask you something because we've just gone through – I mean, we're coming up on, it's hard to believe, 2 years of COVID, and it just shut down live performing. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine you not being in front of a crowd. Have you gone back yet?
Yeah, I went back this weekend.
Did you talk to anybody before you went back out there?
No. And that's just my process. I don't know what Eddie's, I don't know what your problem, I don't know what nobody else, but this is my process, and I trust it.
Do you talk to Eddie Murphy? You guys close?
That's my dude. We were just talking the other day. We was, with me and Eddie, we like, Eddie is the smartest man I ever met in my life. And he has a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. I remember when he hosted Saturday Night Live. I went in his dressing room, said, what's up? And he was looking at the Honeymooners, like I do.
Right.
The Honeymooners, Ralph puts me to sleep every night for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I love the Honeymooners. That's me. Because my life is not all funny. It was really sad.
Yeah.
So I know how to go from funny to this. That's,
yeah, because Ralph Cramden, when you think about it,
and
that
the
was
thing
the most
that made you look at the show every week is when he looked at his wife and mm-hmm. said, baby, you're the greatest.
Yeah.
I'm watching this next week. I'm watching it.
But, you know, you look at it. You look at that TV set, the apartment mm-hmm. on the Honeymooners. It's the most depressing set in the history of television.
Well, it was in the 50s. Lauren Michaels told me about it. I was talking to Lauren about it one day. He said they didn't have ice boxes in the 50s. They had refrigerators.
Right. They made it intentionally as drab and sad looking as possible. And nothing ever goes right for Ralph Cramden. But it's hilarious. So to me.
Every week he tried.
Yeah.
And if you look at The Last OG, that's what it is.
Yeah.
One episode, the first season, I'm looking at Tiffany and I'm talking to Tiffany Haddish and I said, baby, you're the greatest. Mm-hmm. That was older Ralph.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that on TV so long.
You know what's amazing to me? Let me tell you one thing, which is that one of my comedy heroes, and it's crazy, but Bob Newhart. Bob Newhart. I love Bob Newhart. So smart. So
he was just on SNL. He's incredibly
smart.
He's
absolutely incredibly smart, and really revolutionized a lot of comedy in his own way. And I asked him once, "Who was the best stand-up you ever saw?" And without missing a beat, he said Richard Pryor. And it's so fascinating to me that. And what's amazing is how it just it jumps over every barrier.
You know, I always wanted to be like that. I wanted. Everyone to come see me, not just black people, everyone to come see me and laugh.
Right.
And laugh. So that's what I patterned myself after was Richard. But who didn't?
Yep.
You did, I did. Who didn't? But he bombed. But if you look at Still Smoking, he's bombing in a club right here in New York in the 70s. And it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Well, I think watching a really good comedian bomb is hilarious.
Oh my goodness.
There's nothing
funnier.
I'm
going down in flames.
Yeah.
Mayday, 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 mayday. And I'm taking people with me. I'm taking you with me. Well, if I go down, you going down with me.
It is so funny when someone's bombing because
I'm up here fighting for my life.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fighting for your life. This moment right here is going to prove whether you're going to become something or not.
Yeah.
And you got to fight for your life. And my idea, Conan, if I'm going down, you going down with me. When I first got in show business, I would get on the stage and I would see the skinniest dude in the front row.
Yeah.
And I would say to that skinny dude in front of all these people, if they don't laugh at my shit, I'm going to fuck you up. And that's how I broke the
ice. That was me. Everybody, you asshole, that was me.
You know how much a polar bear weighs?
No.
Enough to break the ice. And then I got on SNL and I seen Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell He gave me my fearlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's when I started taking my shirt off. He was fearless. He would come to pitch meetings. You know you were there.
Yeah.
He would come to Lauren Michaels, and Lauren is sitting there eating his popcorn. And
just let me tell everyone, Lauren has a ritual where he eats popcorn out of a bowl. It has no salt. And he takes little bites, and you're pitching him your idea, and he's
eating
it.
But Will would come in a full armored suit. A steel full fucking...
Dressed up like a knight?
It started from the pitch.
Yeah.
And I learned that. And I started doing funny pitches.
Right.
Hilarious pitches. And it goes to the table, and then it goes to the floor, and then it goes to the air dress. Then it goes to air. That's the evolution of it.
But you know, and all your characters and all the stuff that you did on SNL, my favorite thing was Brian Fellow. He's the naturalist.
I love that. And
it's such a part of you. He'd always get into this imaginary fight and a feud with the animal who hadn't done anything. But that's so you, because what I learned a long time ago is start some kind of conflict when you get up there. But you were getting into these arguments with these animals that hadn't done anything. And you were pissed. And it was so fantastic.
I love doing those characters, but the one that was closest to me was Woodrow.
Yeah.
In a sewer.
Yeah.
You got the girl, boy gets girl, girl, boy loses girl. And it was that. That was my life. That was the closest one. He was very close to me because he got the girl, then he lost her.
So it's fascinating, because what you basically just told me is that I think of you as being completely fearless. And you said when you got to SNL, you were inspired somewhat by Will Ferrell, because Will Ferrell would take his shirt off. Will Ferrell has those dead eyes. You know, I've always said to people, the secret to Will, in my opinion, he's hilarious and he's brilliant. His eyes, he can make his eyes go completely dead. And I start laughing. So he would come on my show. He came on my show once and he had a big bird, like a cockatoo, on his shoulder. And he told me, we're not talking about the bird. So I tried to have a normal interview with him. And you know him with the dead eyes. And every now and then the bird would go, and I go like, you know about the bird? And he'd say, we're not talking about the bird, Conan.
His commitment. Play it straight, Sam.
Yeah.
Play it straight.
Play it straight.
When you play it straight, they fall out.
But I think that is something. You have this great energy and this ability to, you completely 100% believe in what you are saying and what you're doing in that moment, as absurd as it is. So you can go on when you start talking
about... And I'm dealing with this dude on the base. I'm having this conversation with you, but I'm keeping my eye on him.
On the bass player in the band.
And that made them laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me and you.
You wouldn't look at me, and then you'd take offense to things that no one would take offense to. And you'd be suspicious of things that, you know, and I was just like, this is fantastic. And this is one of the reasons why I think Tina Fey, who I have an enormous amount of respect for so many reasons, but she figured out how to let you be you on 30 Rock.
My sister. Because the guys weren't really writing for me on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she came, she said, wait a minute, there's a diamond right here. And she figured out with Judge Judy and The View, and she started casting me in these sketches, and she saw. And then that's when everybody started writing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I came up with Give Me a Soda, Bitch. I came up with that. I knew Lauren Michaels is non-conflictual. He doesn't like the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So one day, me and him was in an elevator by ourselves. It's me and him going upstairs, mm-hmm. and he was standing in front of me, and behind him, I was just smiling. And I know he felt that. And I felt the tension there. So then I went to pitch, and I pitched, "Give me a soda, bitch." Because it was true. But then when I did it, Conan, I was afraid. Because where I come from, if you call your boss a bitch, you get fired.
Right.
So I had a talk with Lauren. Because they all thought it was funny that it went to dress. It went to rehearsal. And then I said, Lauren, I spoke with him at 3 in the morning on a writing night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Lauren, I'm kind of caught up about this, you know, saying give me. Because I love Lauren. Lauren is like my dad.
Yeah.
I literally called him my pops.
Yep.
You know what I mean? After, when I came out and I hosted after the accident, I called him daddy in front of millions of people. I love you like I love my daddy. So he said, I said, Lauren, where I come from, if you call your boss a bitch, you get fired. And Lauren looked at me and said, no, I'm not really a bitch. We're doing this sketch. And I was, that was, you know, for me, that was the blessing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When I did it, I went all out.
Well, I think that's the other thing that Lauren's proven time and time again is he knows how to let people
do their thing. He's not talking to you the first 2 years.
Yeah.
You got to prove yourself on a set.
Well, I used to pass him in the hallway and he'd say, still with the show? Like, that was his way of letting me know.
Still with the show?
You still with the show. I thought we let you go. And that was his way of, and I knew I was doing well and getting a lot of stuff on, but it was his way of, and then finally, after about a year and a half or so, he drifted back. And he came into my.
He never said that to the actors. He come at y'all.
Yeah.
The writers and stuff.
Yeah.
He curse you out. The picture is co-starring in the sketch. Or that, he knew we were under a tremendous amount of pressure just performing it.
Yep.
But his writers are his writers.
Yeah.
Those are his babies.
Yeah.
So he come at y'all before he come at us.
Now you got in this famous accident, terrible accident, and right. You were really, you know really in bad, you were really me? In bad shape. What did the doctor you tell know, you?
No, my lawyer told me this, Ben Morelli. He said, two biggest accidents in the world was yours and Princess Diana's. That was Walmart. At the time, Walmart was the third biggest corporation in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Apple, Mobil, Exxon. Mm-hmm. Apple and Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the fourth because of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I'm out there on the turnpike looking for Amazon truck, man.
Wait, you're trying to get hit by an Amazon truck?
I got my beach chair and I just wait. Like Amazon, I'm trying to go big.
So let me picture this. You're sitting on the side of the turnpike, highway in a beach chair. You got your champagne.
For the right size. If I get 18 wheel of Amazon, I'm paying for life. I'm a billionaire. If I survive it, I'm a billionaire. If I survive it, I'm a billionaire.
Okay. So, and then your doctor, I know you went right to your lawyer, but I tried to go to your medical condition first and then your legal condition. I love how I say, and you were like, forget what the doctor said.
Listen,
my lawyer came
heal,
in.
Bones heal. But when you got traumatic brain injury, that's an uh-oh when you mess with somebody's mind.
Yeah.
So when I came back, I didn't even know how to eat. I didn't. They had to teach me how to eat. I remember all of that like it was yesterday. I'll never forget it. I had to walk. I had to learn how to sit down. I had to learn how to do a lot of things. I was really bad. Really bad.
Did you think you would perform again?
No. I was afraid. I was scared. I remember being home in my wheelchair watching the 40th anniversary, crying.
40th anniversary of SNL.
Very afraid and crying, especially when Alec and Tina gave that speech about me.
Mm-hmm.
I just broke down. I remember before the 40th, we were talking about what we were going to wear, me and my wife, the lawyers. We were talking about what we were going to wear and all that. Then he went home. Then he came back the next day and said, we're not going. My wife woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and said, y'all going to do what? No, y'all not. All they need to do is see Tracy Morgan with his pretty wife waving, smiling. There ain't nothing wrong with him.
Oh, I see. Your lawyer didn't want you to look like you were too healthy.
I was bad. He didn't want me to be there, period. Fuck Walmart. He didn't want me there like that.
Right.
Nobody needs to see you like this.
Right.
So he said to me, you want to go via satellite? I said, no. I don't want to be a part of it then. Since I can't be there, no.
Yeah.
Just went black.
So then you end up hosting. You come
My
back.
Daughter was only 10 months, so she was just learning how to walk.
Right.
But she was scared of me when I first came home. I stayed in the bed for 2 weeks. I don't even remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed in the bed for 2 weeks. And then my daughter would come to me because she was scared of the wheelchair.
Yeah.
And that really hurt me. That really hurt me. And whoa. And she learned how to walk at 14 months. And when I seen her take a few steps, I got out the wheelchair. My wife screaming, no, no, no. And I took my first 2 steps.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my daughter learned how to walk together.
Wow.
That was my baby. And she's then, my best co-star ever. She's all in The Last OG. She's through the whole season. My best co-star ever.
How do you get back on stage after something like that? How do you host Saturday Night Live?
When I first went back on stage after the accident, I was hosting Saturday Night Live. And we were at rehearsals. Mm-hmm. And then that night, I decided, let's go to the cellar. And my boy was like, what? I said, let's go to the cellar. Let's go to the cellar. And I grabbed the mic. I remember. And it felt so good just to be welcomed back. It really did. And that day, I didn't think I was ever going to touch the microphone again. I did.
You had real doubt that people...
I didn't think I was going to walk again. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was ever going to walk again. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I just fought. I fought to come out the coma. I see my daughter in a coma, say, Daddy, come back. She was only 10 months old. And I fought and I came out the coma. Then I just wanted to be better. I wanted to be better in my life. Mm-hmm. As a better person, a better human being to others. And that's all I wanted to be. I know he spared my life for a reason. He spared my life for a reason. So now I give back to those who are less fortunate. I give out food. I just gave out, like a month ago, we just gave out, 1,000 turkeys with the mm-hmm. fixings. And mm-hmm. I'm partnered with Food Banks of America. And now Amazon is on board. And I'm giving out $1,000 to 5 families and $40,000 to any organization. And that's what I'm doing December 16th. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing that. And that's my mission. I'd rather be a good man than a funny man any day. I don't give a fuck about that. Now, when it comes to being a good person, I'm building my house, Conan. And I don't build my house on a bridge because life is just a bridge. I'm building my house on the other side of the bridge. So when I enter this kingdom, I got somewhere to live. Mm-hmm. And my door's always open to you because you are my brother in comedy. You are my comrade. Because when me and you together out there, we know how to do it. We do it together. I'm not doing this shit by myself. And I know that. I know whenever I came on your show, I wasn't going to be by myself. I know once I get into a thing, you went right with me. And it turned out to be beautiful. It didn't matter. Even when there wasn't no audience. When we did it at my house and I'm in front of the Shark Tank, mm-hmm. me and you did beautiful. You know how to be funny with me.
I don't think it's about celebrities either. I think it's just about other people that yeah. know how to do it. So if I'm... And you're the same way if wherever I am, if I'm in the bottom of a coal mine and I bump into somebody who's got that thing, I just want to be funny with them.
But if I'm in the bottom of a coal mine mm-hmm. and we trapped in there, I'm going to turn my light helmet on, my helmet, my light click, and then he's going to be crying up to the lake. We getting you. We in here. We stuck. We getting you.
You're not. No, we're going to do comedy down there.
I'm getting him pregnant.
If you're trapped at the bottom of a mine
and you're trapped,
you're gonna get the other guy pregnant.
And there's no way to get out. Oh, he's done.
Why did you go there?
Ain't no women in here.
We were in the bottom of a mine.
That's where it's going to stay, at the bottom of that mine. Whatever happens in the trap mine stays in the trap.
I thought we
mine.
Had a really inspirational thing going. You were in tears just a few minutes ago.
Absolutely.
And now you're getting a guy pregnant at the bottom of a mine.
Yes, that's how quick it happens. That mine switched to that mine. We trapped in a mine. We trapped in a mine. You done. I was crying 1 minute, and now we're getting it on.
You know what's crazy? I was thinking about this too, which is I have met so many people, and I've said it myself, which is that comedy was my survival mechanism. I think you, almost more than anybody I know, literally used it to survive.
Well,
like, it saved your life.
You got to understand, my oldest brother, Jimmy, mm-hmm. James Morgan, my oldest brother, he's 2 years older than me. He's the oldest, I'm the second oldest. He was born with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. So he never, his leg, he was always crippled. Mm-hmm. So that was my rage. My brother, seeing my brother that way, seeing my brother with the Forrest Gump braces on and mm-hmm. not being able to walk. So when I was in high school, I played football and I ran track so well because he could never do it. Mm-hmm. He would never know what it is to walk regular like me and you. Mm-hmm. He got 11 kids. I mean, his legs might be weak. Ain't nothing wrong with his dingling. Ain't nothing wrong. He got 11 kids, but he's crippled. So that was my...
Is that a medical term? There's nothing wrong with his ding-a-ling?
There ain't nothing wrong with his ding-a-ling.
It says that on the chart?
It says that's what the doctor says.
I've got to tell you, although your legs are compromised, you know, we've done a lot of studies and the MRI shows that there's nothing wrong with your ding-a-ling.
But I told Eddie, you know, when I got bullied in school, I couldn't say, well, I'm run home and get my big brother. And you come back. And Eddie said, that's not true. You funny because God gave you that as a gift. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, I thought I was funny because I couldn't go get my brother. If I got bullied, I would just make the bullies laugh.
Right, right.
To keep them off of me.
Right.
To keep them off of me, I got really funny growing up in the ghetto that way. And Eddie said, no, you're funny because God gave you that.
Just so it doesn't have to come from a dark place.
It no, just it doesn't. Be a gift. We can make fun of our joys. Mm-hmm. We can make fun of the joy. A lot of people say that your comedy comes from a set. No, it doesn't. That's not true.
Yeah.
Because we make fun of our joys too.
Yeah.
So it doesn't just come from being depressed and all. It doesn't. We have joy in our lives, mm-hmm. or we wouldn't be alive. You'd be dead. Yeah. So I never believed that. I talk about my kids and they bring me joy. I don't talk about them per se, but I'll talk about things that children do. Because my children are not, they just like everybody else's children. They do funny shit. That's how it is.
When you get up there on stage, how much of it is worked out beforehand, or is it shockingly little? Because you're very
no, you a lot no of one. It is.
It, a lot of it is. You have like a skeleton of what you're going to work off of. But I know you come up with some great stuff out
on
there
stage.
In the moment, and that's the best stuff.
Yeah, that's the best stuff. I cross the line a lot. I do that, but I've created a zone for that.
Meaning, you know that people seeing you.
They know
are aware that that's not really you. You're coming at it from this insane angle.
Yeah, I could walk that lane. I could walk on in that lane. When I'm on your show, I know how to be. I know how to do it. I already know that before I even get out there. I know Conan's going to be there. He's going to hold me down. And we're going to rock. And they're going to have a great time. And the laughter is just an appreciation for me and your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. We have our sense of humor without them. But their laughter is just showing an appreciation for it. Period. I love all stand-ups. I know how difficult this can be. Just don't quit. How are you going to do it once and then don't do it again? You can't do that. This is not something you could jump in and out of.
So, you know, I've had people come to me and say, I'd like to try comedy. And I think—
No, you don't try comedy.
You don't try it. You don't try it. You
it's
just in jump
you
in.
Or it is not.
Yeah.
Your sense of humor.
I mean, you're getting
God
mad.
Bless us all with a sense of humor.
Well, you're getting angry now, and I don't like
no,
that.
No, I don't want you to think I'm getting angry.
You're getting very angry.
I'm mad at them.
Who's that? You're pointing at the people behind the, in the sound, yes. in the control room. Why
Absolutely.
Are you mad at them? See, this is what you do. I'm right here across from you. We've had an amazing-
This guy right here looking at me, Conan.
That's Adam Sachs. He's,
I don't know why he's looking at me like that.
He's just trying to figure out a way to get a podcast out
as
of you.
As long as you can keep him in check.
There's no keeping Adam Sachs in check.
That's why I keep an eye on him.
Yeah, you've been staring down the people. But there's a glass. Let me explain to our listeners. As always, you know, we're here in New York.
Right.
I'm talking to you and we're in person. And there's this piece of glass. And then there's some technicians. There's Adam Sachs, who's the podcast whisperer. We got our people
he's
back.
He's on the side and he's looking at me. And I don't know why he's doing that.
So you're suspicious of him?
A little bit. They all have sense of humor back there.
They've been laughing a lot.
Me and you are just more in touch with ours. That's what makes us comedians.
Well, I also
and
think
not.
That's what makes
and that's
us
what
better.
Makes Adam Sandler, Adam, that's what makes him who
no
he
one's
is.
Ever mistaken Adam Sachs for Adam Sandler, by
yeah,
the way.
Adam
Never.
Sachs.
Yeah. He's very.
I got to just keep an eye on him. Good. And do with the hat, too. I can watch him.
Well, if guys wearing a hat.
I think they together. I think they may be together. Moving together. Moving and grooving.
If you know what I mean. You haven't looked at me once this whole interview. It's incredible.
It's okay.
Keep looking over to the side.
Yeah.
I'm right here. I want you to look me in the eye. I want you to deal with me.
I'm not dealing.
I'm Conan. You've got to.
Okay, Conan, but I got to see if I get beat up in this because he snaps. What happens to me?
I protect you.
If he.
Huh? Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If shit got real, we were in trouble, would you trust me physically to protect you? Do you think I could physically protect
you? I'm going to either see you two places, in a hospital or in the precinct, because we're going down this rabbit hole together. Period. That's where I come from. Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Bed-Stuy. Do or die. Take the girl, kill the guy.
Jesus.
That's where I'm from.
That was Not the Brookline, Massachusetts motto. You know what it motto.
Is? No. This is a cinch to me. Show business is a cinch to me. Before show business, I was making guys that came home that just did 28 years in prison laugh.
Right, right.
So if I could make them laugh, this is a cinch to me. I've never changed who I was. Whenever you saw Trey, that's who he is. That's what he do. I'm only different with my children. I try tenderness with them. I do. I'm very tender with my children.
So you're not talking this craziness with your children. You're not saying...
My daughter is just, my daughter's on my show. She's funny just
I
like
know,
me.
But, but she's not, when you go home to your kids.
I got to be able to know my kids, who they really are. I don't want my kids turning it off and turning it on with me.
Right.
I'm daddy. I don't want that. I want them to know how to be themselves. If you go into show business, I got a star on the walk of Hollywood. I'd rather you be a doctor or a lawyer or a judge. I'd rather that.
Let me ask you something. I'm the same way. I don't want my kids going into show business. You don't want your kids going into show business. No one who's in show business wants their kids in show business.
In show business.
Why?
Because you know how difficult it is.
Yeah.
And you know everybody can't handle the door closing in their face.
Right. I don't want any my kids' feelings to get hurt, although my feelings have been hurt 1,000
times.
But
we wasn't going to quit. That's just not in our DNA. Me and you, we not going to quit. We going to come harder and funnier and harder and funnier. You never quit. You see when Lauren Michaels say, you still on the show?
Yeah.
Most people would have quit.
Yeah. Not me, because my motto is do or die.
And if you could blow up Saturday Night Live, and Saturday Night Live is show business.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the best go. And I asked Lauren Michaels one day, how come Michael Jackson never did Saturday Night Live? He said it would have made him too small.
Really?
It would have made him too small.
Just to make, he would have made
Michael
him
was bigger than TV.
Right, right.
It was Michael. He got bigger than America. He could perform in America. He wasn't performing in America. You can't do that moonwalk shit here. You know I'm in the record books for Born Michael Jackson.
What?
I went to see Michael Jackson. I sat in the front row. And he started that moonwalk shit. And I said, boo, boo, because we had already saw it. Boo.
Wait, you booed Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk?
I'm in the record books for booing him.
Well, just because he had done it one other time.
I want to see something new.
It's the moonwalk.
I want to see
It's Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk.
I've seen it already.
That's ridiculous.
Do new material.
You wanted him to have another move where he went forward instead of backwards.
Now you got it. Now you got it.
How did the crowd react when you booed Michael Jackson
they
doing the moonwalk?
They tried to jump me.
They tried to jump you?
Got on a t-shirt and said, what about Tito? And on the back it said, free little Kim.
Okay, now listen to me.
What about Randy? Who cries for Randy? Who cries for Randy?
I cry for Randy.
You're the only one. That's sad.
You've actually said a couple of things today that I believe, and they're heartfelt, and they're real. And that's amazing to me because most of what you say, you got to admit, is complete bullshit. No one talks crazy like
as long
like
as the judge buys it. If the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And that's your
as long as the judge
philosophy.
Buys it.
Yeah.
I'm free.
Yeah. You seem good. I got to say, you seem happy. You seem centered.
I try to be.
And you know what? You smell great, by the way. I hugged you when I saw you. What am I smelling there? That's amazing.
I don't know, but my dad always told me, a man must have fragrance on because women love fragrance.
Mm-hmm.
I love when a woman goes, that shoe smell like that? That's my way in. Or I keep my shoe untied. They go, your shoe's untied? And that's the conversation.
Wait, that's how I
got all them kids.
Wait, your method to meeting women is to leave your shoe untied? I could do that, and women would just say, tie your fucking shoe, and then keep walking.
That's why you got to hang out with me, man. That's why we got to hang.
That is your secret, is you just leave your shoe untied.
And smelling good.
And smelling good. What's the fragrance? I want to know.
I don't have. I have a million of fragrances at the house. I pick one, I put it on.
You know what? I hugged you when you came in, and I swear to God, it smelled so good that I went back in time. I saw Lincoln get shot. I mean, everything. It was incredible.
Imagine if you was a woman.
I did.
You would have had my baby.
I almost did when I hugged you.
Yeah,
I wanted to have your baby.
I know.
You smelled amazing. You smell incredible.
I smell like a monk.
What?
I smell like Gandhi.
I don't know that you smell like
I'm
Gandhi.
I'm trying to break Gandhi's record as far as kids are concerned.
Did Gandhi have a lot of kids?
He had a lot. He had 30, 40.
I don't know if that's even
I'm
true.
I'm trying to break his record. I almost broke Eddie's record.
How many kids does Eddie have?
10. Trying to break Bob Marley's record.
You choose strange records to break. You know, like if you're, just think about it. You're a comedian, and of course, Eddie Murphy's incredibly talented, amazing powerhouse comedically. But the record you want to break of Eddie's is how many children?
Babies, yeah.
Babies.
You imagine if you got that many kids, women be like, oh, he make babies. Jesus. I'm old school, man. I don't pull out. I'm old school. I'm like prison. When I come in, I come in. I'm in here. I'm in here, and I'm doing life.
I'm writing this stuff down.
I'm doing life.
Is it okay?
You got my children.
I'm going to write this
Me
down.
Me and you.
Who, you now you're shouting. You're shouting at the people again in the sound booth.
My woman.
You just.
My baby be half black and half white. Wow. Beautiful. Look just like her mama. I paint my girlfriend's toenails. That's my thing.
What's happening?
I like old women.
You like old women? How old?
75, 80.
Wait, you like a 75 to 80-year-old woman?
C-section, this thick.
Okay, for God's
that's
sake.
That's my thing.
So that's, you like an old woman?
Yeah, that's my thing. Her breasts is way down here by her thighs.
You like that? That turns you
I
on?
I love it. As Tina Fey said, she got some tick old bitties. Yep. Tick old bitties.
That's a Tina Fey quote, all right.
You know why I want an older woman? Because I'm not into young girls no more. You know why? Because old women don't leave you. They just die. They just die.
You don't want a woman who's going to leave you.
I don't want to be left again.
Well, they're still leaving you, just in another way.
If she die, you just take flowers to her funeral, the grave.
Right. And then people feel sorry for you. And then you got that working for you, plus your shoes untied. So you got the shoes untied and
I got a technique. But these guys right here, they listening to my technique. He going to leave his shoes untied. Now, your shoes untied. And listen how that sounds. Excuse me, your shoes untied.
It doesn't work. I'm going to try this today. I'm going to go to I'm staying here in New York. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put the wedding ring in my back pocket and I'm going to untie my shoe and no one's going to say shit to me.
They will.
No, they won't.
You just gotta keep your shoes untied.
No, does it?
See, I got my shoe untied. Why she say, your shoes untied. Why she say that?
Well, that's Paula Davis, I think. That's our booker, Paula Davis. Paula, do you find it? Just nod. Do you find it attractive? She's saying yes. She's giving a thumbs up.
You know what it was? In high school, I used my comedy for the girls. Mm-hmm. I could sing, and I used my comedy for the girls. So the girls loved me in high school. And then when I got older, it turned into a business. But I still do it for the girls.
Yeah.
Because women know comedy before men do. Men have egos. So he gonna be here. I'm funnier than him. But women know comedy from the setup.
I think you're absolutely right.
So if you get the girls laughing, the guys are gonna soon follow. That's just it is where I come from. When I'm on your show and I'm being the way I am, women know that's hilarious. They know it's hilarious. He all suspicious and don't trust me. That's hilarious.
I knew right away, so I must have a strong feminine side. I knew you were funny.
Yes, I knew
I knew you were funny right away.
I knew it. I knew it
before that you got to the joke. And when I hugged you, I wanted to have your baby. I think I have a very strong feminine side that's getting stronger
and
every
me,
day.
And me, I knew all of that.
Yeah. You knew. You knew about me.
I said, I'm going to get Conan. And I hung on in there. We go a long way back.
We do.
I hung on. Oh, wow. You fixing your hair. I like that.
Ooh. Oh, my God. You are so distracted.
I know I'm so distracted.
Yeah, look at you. You know what? We're going to end this interview, and you're going to look at me. I'm taking my glasses off.
God damn it. Why'd you do that?
I want you to look at me.
Why'd you do that?
Look at me. I just took my glasses off. Look at me and deal with me. I'm right here. It's not about them. It's about you and me. You and me, when we retire from comedy, we're going to live together.
You
want to do that?
I want to do that.
Do you want to live with me?
I want it done.
The two of us together in an apartment.
I want it done. But then you're probably going to go after my Walmart money.
Well, I'd like a piece of it.
No, I'm not sharing that with no one.
Okay.
But, Conan.
Yeah.
What was I going to say just now before you distracted me?
You were going to say, Conan, you're the best, you're the funniest, and I love you more than I've ever loved anyone else in this world.
Absolutely.
You said it just like I wrote it.
Absolutely.
Tracy, I love you. I really do.
I love you more,
and
Conan.
And
you know what the best thing about me and you?
What?
We're always going to be friends. Being with you, you taught me a lot. And I was comfortable because you were a writer on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
So you came, you are literally my alumni.
That's true.
Literally.
It's like we were in the army together at different times. But yeah, I think everyone at SNL feels
I knew
that
what
way.
The drill was.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here now.
All right, I'm going to hang out with you for the rest of the day. What are we doing?
Just hanging.
Okay.
Whatever, we go to Times Square. We just hang out.
I don't want to go to Times Square.
Well, my boy runs the Big Apple Circus. We can go over there and watch him walk through a high wire. You know, it doesn't matter.
I think people get creeped out if you and I are hanging around the Big Apple Circus.
All right. We could go to Benihana's.
Oh, I love Benihana's.
I know Benny. I went to high school with Benny. I know Benny. I know Ben. Yo, B. Yo, B, come here.
Did you teach him to light stuff on fire? Was that you?
That was me. Choo-choo training and all that?
Yeah.
I gave him that technique.
All right. Tracy Morgan, I'm going to, I hate to let you go, but I got to let you go because
right
you
on.
Have other things to do. But
I'll be back. As yeah. long as you're doing this, I'll be back.
I will talk to you anytime.
And I have a lot of stuff to talk about.
And you know what I'll tell you? I will talk to you anytime. I will learn very little. Most of what you say is not true, but you also.
But you don't talk to everybody.
No, I don't.
You just don't.
I don't.
And everybody ain't doing this show.
No. You're a good man. We're shaking hands right now.
I love you, Conan.
I love you too, man. He's tying his shoe right now. That means he's not going to get any later on.
No, because she don't want me.
We need to discuss something. It is well known, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, that Sona is, I don't want to say an amoral person.
Come on.
But Sona has committed many crimes. You've confessed on the TV show to your thefts in the past, your sordid past, stealing things in stores. And before COVID hit, we actually wanted to shoot a remote where we brought you back to all the different stores where you've stolen things, had you admit to stealing them, and then return those goods or pay the cash equivalent. And we were going to do that, but then I think this is the biggest tragedy of COVID. We weren't able to shoot that remote. That and, of course, all the loss of life and stuff. Economy. But yeah, one of the biggest tragedies of COVID was that we didn't get to shoot that remote. But we were just chatting, and Sona started to reveal another of her heinous crimes.
Okay.
And I felt we needed to record this. Because I don't even understand.
Yeah, explain this again.
Explain this. Explain this grift. You started to talk about back in the day when you would go to an all-you-can-eat sushi place. Continue, Sona.
Okay, so first of all, it's not a heinous crime.
Let's call it despicable.
Despicable. Thank you.
Yeah.
Why don't we let the jury decide? The jury being our listeners.
Okay.
And of course, me being the judge, so I can overrule the jury in this weird kangaroo court. Go ahead, Sona. Tell us about this. Scam.
So if you go to some all-you-can-eat sushi restaurants, some people overorder and then they end up with a lot of extra sushi. So because a lot of people would overorder, these sushi restaurants will charge you for whatever sushi you don't eat.
Right.
Yeah.
As they should. Because it's not like they can give that sushi to someone else.
Right. And you know, it's sushi. It's not like you're going to a buffet and like, you know, you're like piling up your plate. You're ordering sushi that people are making. Anyway, yeah. So
this sounds like a very sane and rational policy.
Okay. So my friends and I, we would go to these all you can eat sushi restaurants and you know, we have a little bit to drink, you know, like you'd
are
be
you
like,
drunk
yeah.
now?
I wish.
You would have a lot to drink or have a massive cerebral event. A brain bleed.
Yeah, the sake's flowing, the Sapporo's flowing, and then you just order too much. And what I would do is I would, when the waiters weren't looking, I would shove all of the extra sushi, which was a lot, into one of the dinner napkins. And then I would like hide it in my shirt or shove it in my purse. And then I'd go to the bathroom and I'd throw it away.
What?
You wouldn't even
steal it? You wouldn't take it home and eat it?
That's
you threw it away.
Waste. We just ate an all-you-can-eat meal. Why would I want more sushi? And why would
maybe
I want
you give it
sushi?
To somebody? Somebody who could eat it.
What kind of creep takes out sushi from their purse wrapped in
it? You apparently.
No, but I mean, first of all, just imagine for a second. Imagine that you are a tuna. and you're swimming in the sea, and suddenly you're snared in a net and hauled up.
My great purpose, I'm going to be some sushi.
You think for a second, well, my life has been short, but I see that they're taking me to a sushi restaurant, and before I completely lose consciousness, at least myself, I will create happiness. My flesh will go to sustain another species in this great mystery and cycle of life. At least that gives me some joy. Wait, what? They're chopping me now. Okay, I'm still somewhat alive somehow. And they're putting me with some rice.
Hi, I'm Bilbo the Rare Octopus.
They're bringing me over to these ladies. Oh, well, at least I'm just kind of, I can't believe I'm still kind of alive, but I am. I'm able to see, but at least I'm going to go into the mouths of, what? Shoved in a napkin? My entire corporeal form? My body? She's taking me maybe outside to give to someone who has no food. Wait, not the ladies' room. Shoved in a trash can? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph! I'm a Catholic! Tuna fish!
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we rest our case.
That's awful.
Sona.
That's the worst. Sona, that's the worst thing I've heard.
Stop.
That is worse than that guy that was trying to, like, people that are faking vaccine cards or making fake COVID serums that don't even work.
Come
You're on. A worse criminal than them. You threw fresh sushi into a ladies' room trash can.
How recent ago was this?
How recent ago?
Lay off.
A second. There's a separate trial. Gorley's trial is coming after this one. But we'll get to that soon.
I will remind you, I am not under oath.
You know what? I was working for Conan. So it was within the
last. What? I thought this was something you did when you were 16 or 17.
She learned it from watching you, Dad.
Seriously? No.
I thought this was a long time ago.
I was like 20s. Maybe.
Working for me, late 20s.
Late 20s.
Early 30s.
Late 20s. I don't
criminal. Know. War criminal.
It's not. Why are you making the restaurant all you can eat sushi and then charging me for the extra sushi? Just say it's a normal sushi restaurant. What's the point?
That's true. You do have a point there.
Thank you.
No, you have no point. Leave it there. Pay the price. Those octopi gave their lives. And we all know those are very intelligent creatures. They've written books. Octopus, they have the brains of like a, I think they've done studies. Octopi have the brains of like a 25-year-old graduate.
What?
Yeah. Someone who went to Brown University. Uh-huh. That's how smart they are. You know, that's how smart. And they gave their lives. And you're like, I don't want to pay for this.
There's a documentary called My Octopus Teacher. So that means that octopuses are like certified tenured teachers.
Also, did you stay and watch the credits? You know who directed the movie? The Octopus.
That's right.
Oh, God.
That's right.
And you know who got the funding for it? Other octopi. Mm-hmm. That's how smart they are.
Well.
And that's how smart they be. Sorry, but if we're talking about sea creatures, I had to go a little bit into a pirate. Sona,
yeah.
You are undoubtedly the worst person I've ever met.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I'm getting now where I'm looking. I have a device here that allows me to see the listeners. And yes, overwhelmingly, it's coming in. People think that you're a monster.
Oh,
yeah, we're
going
to have to remand you into custody right now, straight from the courtroom.
All yeah,
right.
You're being sensed. You know what we're going to do now? We're going to go back to that all-you-can-eat sushi place.
And you have to barf it up.
And you are going to bring the live fish to those restaurants.
What?
You're going to bring live fish to those restaurants, and you're going to show them what you did. They'll be kept alive in oxygenated tanks.
Huh.
And you will confess to the crimes at that restaurant.
Okay.
And then we'll leave the fish there at the restaurant so they can be butchered and thrown out by someone else. I didn't give this punishment a lot of thought.
You're really bad at punishments. I was about to say that. So you want me to bring fresh fish to a sushi restaurant and then make them make me sushi? And then
I'm not great at punishments.
Okay.
But Sona, if you disagree with me, I'll put you in a jail cell made of white chocolate. and you'll be forced to watch Different Spoons, seasons 1 and 3. That's your punishment.
Different Spoons?
I don't even know what that is.
You mean silver, Different Strokes and Silver Spoons?
Silver Strokes.
Oh, you're on trial.
What just happened?
You're on trial.
You're going to watch Silver Strokes and Different Spoons.
Silver Strokes is what you're having right now.
Yeah.
You messed up. I love it when you mess up. This is my favorite. You're trying to make me look bad.
You messed up. You know what I did?
Huh.
I switched it around on purpose to give everyone out there and their morning commute
also
a little giggle.
I don't want to do this because I hate when people do this, but it's not octopi, it's octopuses. It's Greek.
I was referring to octopuses that have been ground up and put into a pie, which is referred to as an octopi. So that's what I was referring to. I don't know what you were talking about, but I'm correct. When octopuses are chopped up and minced and put in a pie, it's an octopi. Your Honor, I rest my case. Sona, guilty. Gorley, guilty. Oh, here's the verdict for Conan. Oh, innocent and gets a $900 credit. This is any Bob's big boy in the area.
No way.
Nope. Trust me. Nope. I am judge, jury, and sexecutioner.
What a way to die.
End of segment.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gorley. Produced by me, Matt Gorley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.